If you're lucky, maybe once or twice in a lifetime, you'll encounter a life so brilliant, so extraordinary, they transform the way you see the world. For Dr. Brett Bucklin, that person was Professor Mark Kleiman, the man who challenged the way he viewed the field of corrections. Before he passed away in 2019 at age 68, he was serving as Professor of Public Policy at New York University, this after a celebrated career in public policy and criminal justice, unquestionably one of the field's greatest intellectuals. But it was Mark Kleiman's friendship with Brett Bucklin and the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections that we'll discuss today. Who was he? How did he challenge and change assumptions? What is the legacy he left behind to the field and to our work in Pennsylvania? It's a story you need to know, the life and leadership of Professor Mark Kleiman. Hello, I'm Ryan Tarkowski, and this is Pracademically Speaking, a conversation where ideas and numbers get real. We're at the headquarters of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections again, and here with me today is Dr. Brett Bucklin. Brett is the director of the Bureau of Planning, Research, and Statistics at the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections.
Good morning.
Glad you could join us today. Let's get right into it. We're going to do things a bit differently today. Rather than focusing on a specific program or policy idea, we're focusing on a person. Brett, can you tell us who was Mark Kleiman and how'd you meet him?
Yes. Well, first of all, let me say I'm really excited about this episode because Mark Kleiman was special to me. I try to stay behind the scenes on this podcast, but I had to come on and talk about Mark and his work because I think it was just, I know it was so important to me, and I think it was so important to the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections too. So I'm super excited to be on the episode this morning and to honor my friend and mentor Mark. He passed away in 2019, and I think he was really influential on the department. I find that I'm one of the old heads around here now. I've been around for 23 years. And so I think doing this episode too is just good institutional memory to remember Mark and how he worked with the department and his contributions to stuff that we're still doing today. So all that to say, I'm really excited to talk about Mark. I'll give you the cover story of Mark's background and then give you a personal story about how I first met Mark. So cover story, he went to actually Haverford College here in Pennsylvania. So he's Pennsylvania. I think he was from Baltimore originally, but went to college in Pennsylvania at Haverford. Did his master's and PhD at Harvard Kennedy School of Government, which is a well-renowned public policy school. Also worked with Tom Schelling, who was an economics Nobel laureate there at Harvard. After he graduated, he was a professor at Harvard Kennedy School. He moved on for a long time. He was at UCLA Public Policy School and then ended his career before he passed away at NYU, Marin Institute of Public Policy at New York University. Also was a visiting scholar at University of Maryland and also University of Virginia. And he had a policy background, too. So he was a legislative aide for U.S. Congressman Les Aspin. He also was a special assistant to the CEO for Polaroid. You remember the old Polaroid cameras. He was a special assistant to the CEO and also worked in the Office of Management and Budget for the City of Boston and also worked at the U.S. Department of Justice. So he had a lot of practical and policy experience, too. And he also founded a consulting company called BoTech, which I love the acronym for. It stands for Back of the Envelope Calculation. And this was all what Mark did was he tried to take complex problems and simplify them, write them on a napkin or kind of solve the problem on a napkin. So that's his background. His story of how I met him, or my story of how I met him, I don't think I've told too many people about it, but his book, When Brute Force Fails, which we'll probably talk about in the next following episode to this, came out in 2010, I believe. It was early 2010, maybe late 2009, and he was getting all kinds of media attention for this book. New York Times, The Atlantic, everyone was writing about this book. And I read it because, I try to keep up in the field. That's part of my job. So I read the book and was fascinated with him. I had never heard of him before and the work that he was doing, the ideas that he was describing in the book. So, of course, I jumped on the internet and Googled him. I wanted to learn everything I could find out about Mark Kleiman. Came across a blog site that he had called The Reality-Based Community. And it was himself and his network of professors, other professors, colleagues. And to my dismay, I figured out that while I thought his criminal justice ideas were brilliant, I disagreed with him on almost every other idea. He was very, very different than me, and he had a lot of different ideas to me and all kinds of other things. The blog wasn't just criminal justice. It was public policy, all kinds of things. So short story, funny story, I started actually trolling him on his blog site. You had to log in, so I had to put my email in to log in for an account. But I used a pseudonym, and I was, you know, kind of trolling him with comments, arguing with him.
Did you use a real email address? Address, or do you have like a separate fake email address?
And it wasn't my work address, for the record. This was, you know, back in 2010. But I did use a real email, my home email address, and so he knew who I mean, he could know who I was.
Because then
he could
go back and Google you.
Right, right. You know, after a few months of kind of trolling him, one of the comments got to him, I think, especially, and he was ready to kick me off the site. So he emailed me on my personal email and said, one more comment, and we're going to kick you off the site. And I emailed him, and I was so excited to get an email from him because I really, actually, in reality, really respected him from what I read. So I emailed him back, and I said, no, you've got it wrong. I think your ideas are brilliant about criminal justice. I really, actually, you think you're brilliant, and I would love to meet you. And he invited me, he emailed me back and said, I sent him a book review that I did. We used to have this publication here called Research and Review, where we'd review research in the field. And I did a review of his book and I sent it to him. And he said, actually, that's one of the best reviews of my book I've read. It really captured the book. He said, I'd love to talk to you further and, you know, work with you in the department. And he invited me to come to D.C. He was in D.C. to testify before Congress for something or other. I don't know what it was for, but invited me down to D.C. to just meet him. So I went. I remember I met him in a hotel lobby. We had lunch. He introduced me to his fan club of other professors. He always had this kind of fan club who are, in their own right, really brilliant people. And so I'll never forget that meeting in the hotel. But anyways, that's a long way of answering your question on how I personally first met Mark.
I think it's very interesting and very important for people to know, because so much of what we do on a day-to-day basis is just keeping the lights on. I see so many emails bouncing around every day of everything that happens at a specific facility, a specific parole field office with specific emergent issues and challenges that we have to overcome on a daily basis. I think it's really important for people to know that there are people within the Department of Corrections that are taking a step back and looking at the bigger picture. How did the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections find itself from starting the meager beginnings of you trolling this professor on the internet? How did the Department of Corrections find itself working alongside the giant in the field?
Yeah. So that hotel lobby meeting was the first of several meetings and emails back and forth with Mark. We were at the time, and continue to this day, to really, you know, one of the important issues that we work with at the Department of Corrections is how to respond to parole violators, parolees that are supervised and they violate the condition of their parole. And that was something, you know, that's a major contribution to our prison population, or was at least at the time. And so it was an issue we were struggling with, and it was relevant to his book. Again, we can get into that. But so I invited him. Secretary Beard was the secretary at the time. This is going back administrations now. So this was 2010. And Secretary Beard gave me permission to invite him to the DOC Training Academy in E-Town to give a symposium, to give a talk on his book, When Brute Force Fails. So that was, I believe, in July of 2010.
Who was the audience for that?
So we had executive staff, the folks you know around here now. It was a different crew back then. But the executive staff, we had the District Attorneys Association, some folks from the Sentencing Commission, Mark Bergstrom, who was the executive director for many years at the Sentencing Commission, the Parole Board. The board was completely separate, including the supervision at the time. And so we invited all the parole staff. I want to say we probably had 30 or 40 people in that big gymnasium over at the Training Academy. And so that was the first introduction of Mark to the department. He gave his lecture there. And then from there, there was some interest. So we started consulting with him on various projects, looking for grant funding, looking for opportunities. The one project that, again, we can get into The Hope Project, which came out of his work and his book, was our first interest in working with him. But that's the short story of how we started working with Mark.
Well, let's dig into that a little bit more. HOPE sounds like an acronym. What are some of the initiatives he worked on, and how did they make a difference?
Yeah. Well, the largest one was HOPE. HOPE stands for Hawaii Opportunity Probation with Enforcement. And we'll speak more about that on the following episode, because that really was the main idea coming out of When Brute Force Fails, his book. The later iterations and kind of the principles behind that we call Swift, Certain, and Fair Supervision, or SCF. That's a more generic version of the HOPE program that came out of Hawaii. So we've pilot tested that in at least three different forms here in the department on parole, in prison, and in community correction centers. So we've done three pilots of SCF, or the HOPE type of program. Mark has helped us with reentry efforts, again, with parole supervision. We were going through a period in, I want to say, 2015 of some spikes in our in-prison assaults. And Mark helped us with, introduced us to David Kennedy, who's another professor colleague, and had a lot of ideas around in-prison violence reduction. You might have heard of the Violence Reduction Initiative, VRI. We use VRI all the time now. That was Mark. So Mark was responsible for kind of planting the seeds on VRI. RHU reform. He helped us kind of brainstorm around some early RHU reforms when we were getting sued many years ago, I guess 2013, around that time frame. And then he also testified for, as part of the justice reinvestment legislation, there was a whole discussion around mandatory minimum sentencing. Does it work? Does it not? We had him come here, testify to the state legislature, and be an advisor to us on mandatory minimum sentencing. And then lastly, I think one of the big things he worked with us on is he introduced us to another colleague, Angela Hawken, who was just at our Innovation Day, and she runs an organization called BetaGov. BetaGov, you might have heard of. And so he was responsible for introducing us to BetaGov and the trials and innovations that we do around that. So that's a lot of things that he worked with us on.
Very interesting. It sounds like a lot of these themes that we still hear keep coming back today. It sounds like a lot of research and stuff in multiple fields. We're never finding the end-all, be-all answer. We're always just trying to get a little bit better.
That's right.
We're chatting with Dr. Brett Buckland, Director of the Bureau of Planning, Research, and Statistics of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. We got more questions after the break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Pracademically Speaking, a production of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. Please share or cite any of the guests or content you hear on this podcast, but do not alter the audio in any way. Check for resources or publications mentioned in this episode in the show notes. Now, back to the host.
Welcome back. I'm Ryan Tarkowski with Dr. Brett Buckland, Director of the Bureau of Planning, Research, and Statistics at the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. We've been discussing the life and legacy of his friend, the late Professor Mark Kleiman, who passed away in 2019. Now, Brett, Mark Kleiman's career was extraordinary. Can you give us some of the highlights and how they impact your thinking today?
Sure. Yeah, so Mark had, I think, a few ideas that are going to stand the test of time and really contributed to the field at large, not just Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. One of the main themes that went through his research was how to reduce both crime and punishment. He was concerned that crime was way too high, but also that incarceration rates were way too high. And he thought, that was the subtitle of his book, How to Have Less Crime and Less Punishment. He thought there was a way to reduce both and was really an early thinker on how to do that. He used to say, I remember one of his quotes was, America's criminal justice policy, I hope I get this right. He said, America's criminal justice policy is somewhere in between the disciples of Foucault and de Sade. And this is kind of how Mark spoke. So you have to unpack that. But basically, you know, Foucault was, he thought prison wrote about, the French thinker thought prison was torture and it would have been considered like a prison abolitionist today. And de Sade, another French thinker, is where, you know, his fictional characters is where we get the term sadism. He talked about inflicting pain for pleasure. And so the whole idea was you have like two camps in criminal justice in America and criminal justice policy. One that kind of wants to be tough on crime and the other that just wants to kind of ignore crime. And Mark was like, we can't ignore crime, and we can't ignore over incarceration either. And so having less crime and incarceration was a main contribution of his. He was a drug policy expert. We didn't work so much with him on this, but that was really one of his main expertises was in drug policy. He was the pot czar for Washington State when they were the second state, or maybe the first, to legalize recreational marijuana, and they wanted someone to help them do this in a smart way because they were the first or the second state to do it. So they, the state of Washington, hired him to come in and be their quote pot czar policy person. But he was also very innovative, always about innovating and trying new things in public policy and working with practitioners. So those are just a few of the major contributions he had.
Before we run out of time, you've talked a lot about your friend, Professor Mark Kleiman's intellect. Let us know a little bit more about what he was like as a person.
Yeah. He was definitely a very rational person. He was a brilliant person. The smartest person I ever met, which was made him very intimidating to me. He had an incredible intellect, but he also talked with people from all different perspectives, like the story I started out with about me being, you know, so different from him in many different areas. But he developed a friendship. We developed a friendship. He didn't need to invest in me. I was a young scholar, you know, really the student in that case. But he didn't treat me as such. He treated me as an equal, was not pretentious. He was perpetually curious and was really empathic and compassionate. He cared about people in our system that we serve and that we're dealing with in our system. He liked to talk to on the ground real people, practitioners, policymakers. He wasn't kind of the egghead that sticks in the lab and just talks to other academics. Again, he wasn't pretentious, and he was very open-minded, but he was also very opinionated, and he would argue his case very strenuously and try to. But it was his way, I think, of trying to allow people to poke holes in it, so he would make the best case for it. And then he'd argue it very strenuously, but he would ultimately be open to facts. He was forever dedicated to, you know, science, logic, facts, trying to find out the truth of the matter. And yeah, I could go on, but he was a loyal friend. He had a group of admirers that continues to this day. We get together at conferences and talk about Mark, and just a really, really special guy.
Well, we are out of time, so we'll have to end it there. Brett, thank you so much for joining us today. It was great speaking with you and learning about your friend and mentor, Professor Mark Kleiman. On the next episode, we'll dig a bit deeper into one key idea that Mark left with us, swift, certain, and fair. You mentioned it earlier, SCEF. So we'll put a pause on that, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening. Check out Pracademically Speaking wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. This is the conversation where ideas and numbers get real, on the ground and in practice. Pracademically Speaking is a production of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections.